Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Please delete as appropriate. Hello there, and welcome to this very special episode of the Material Podcast, going out exclusively and especially and with love and appreciation to all of our sponsors, all the people who are in the who have members of Relate.fm and members of the show. This is so we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff here. This is going to be like the confessional stuff from the Real World series that doesn't go on air. It's just for streaming. So if there's anything that's really, I mean, you're going to be shaken to your very core.
Okay, I'm someone gonna, is leading into Paramount that. Plus.
But I don't want you to spill it to Deadline or Variety.com, because this is only for you and makes it less special. And also, it's we're building a room full of trust. And inside that room full of trust is me, Andy Anatko, and also Florence Ion. And also a blast from the past, our present, and of course, the future of mobile broadcasting, Russell Ivanovic. Russell, nice to see you again.
Hello. I brought my weird Australian accent to this podcast.
It's not weird. It's actually very nice to hear an accent, considering I haven't left this country in quite a while. So I invite any accent, any and all right now, to just make me feel like I'm part of a network of people.
Well, I think this is the correct one, right? The best one you could possibly have.
It's believable. I buy it. I mean, I just wanted to start off just by asking, what's it like to live in a country that got its together? Jim, of course.
I was thinking that too.
bleep that out, but there's no other way to put it. Your country seems to have gotten its together regarding COVID, whereas just today I was scraping stickers about how COVID is a hoax.
My God, are everyone you still relax and rebel doing that,
today?
Andy?
Oh, I'm God. Doing this. Today, I even bought like an extra tool because somebody put like a bumper sticker way up on a traffic sign. So I don't know whether this is a different person,
Russell,
or someone
just
else.
So we catch you up really quick on like the regular feed episode that we did. Andy talked about how he's going around the neighborhood. Like there's this QAnoner in the neighborhood just like doing the things the QAnon does. And so Andy is doing, you know, the allyship thing where he goes around every night and takes down everything.
I'm defending my neighborhood against the perception from outsiders that we are a bunch of Nimrods.
Yeah. So this is where the podcast has gone, by the way, Russell.
What is it like to be in a country where, oh gosh, well, we're going to respond to this dramatically and immediately. We're all going to go together because otherwise, I mean, it could be a year later and we still can't have live performances or sports events. And that would be just insane for a modern country like Australia.
Well, we do have sports events in Las Vegas and Texas. Apparently, Texas doesn't care. Everything's open. Anyway, that's Russell, how's Australia?
It's amazing. I think part of the issue here is that we realized very early on that everything in this country can kill us. I mean, that's a well-known fact.
That's right? Also true. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So we ran into that. So we do have a government that's, I would say, very capable is probably the wrong word. They're very backwards on a lot of things. So we are very in the pocket of coal, oil and gas, and they're all our friends.
I was going to say, can't like gay people still can't marry or something?
No, that's being passed down. So I believe, gay people can marry. We finally got there, which is good. But so we for years and years and years, we go to these state elections and we're like, why on earth are we electing people to the state level? Like, what do they do? It's not like the US. So the state has way less powers than the federal government, because in Australia, the federal government sort of rules all. And then this whole, you know, COVID thing struck in, you know, 2019, 2020. And then we finally learned what our state governments are for. They all got their act together really quickly. They're like, well, you know what? Maybe we're not going to let this thing spread tonight. I mean, you can be kind to them or you can be mean. You can say they did it because they wanted to look good and they wanted to finally prove what state government was all about. I don't really care. They did an amazing job.
Exactly.
Of just saying, what if we just put in these restrictions and see how it goes? And it went really well, especially here in South Australia, sort of Adelaide, where I'm from. We had one lockdown in that total time. It lasted 3 days. You know, for 3 days I was locked in my house. You know, it was, it's terrible.
3 days?
My freedom has been limited. But no, it was, and everyone just complied. We're a very sort of compliant society here in South Australia. We're like, okay, do you want us to lock down for longer? Do we need masks? All right, we'll go buy some masks. Do we need this? Okay, we'll go buy that. And we obviously had a lot of, you know, COVID restrictions. So you couldn't go to restaurants for a while and you couldn't do this and you couldn't do that. But everyone was just really happy to do that part. It was very strange for me to see the community just come together and sort of look after each other. And I don't want to do the whole thing where like Australia's better than America and we're so superior, but I'm really thankful that, you know, our state government did that. And now we can just go to things. Like I can go to a restaurant that has 100 people in it. I can go to a sporting event that has 30,000 people in it. And because we don't have sort of COVID spreading in the community, it's all fine. And the weird part is we've really messed up our whole vaccination strategy. I think that's maybe one of the few things that the US has got right and all this. We're completely unvaccinated, like we all want to be, but, you know, the vaccines aren't there. They're not being distributed at the moment. So we're just kind of living in a COVID-free world, sort of hoping for the vaccine.
The disparity between like just land masses is super wild to just think about. Like, yeah, we share a planet, but it's so wild. I mean, we probably sped up our vaccinations and vaccines, A, because of capitalism. That's America's like thing. It's like get the money on it real fast. And you know that like all those big pharmas, not to borrow a terminology from QAnon, but you know that like all of them were just sorry to be cynical, but that is my role on this podcast is to be the cynic. And the other thing is just, will we ever be able to see you again? Because aren't your borders closed off?
Yeah, they're semi-closed. There's a lot of debate about how all that's meant to work and are people allowed in. But pretty much if you come to Australia at the moment, I believe you have to self-quarantine for 14 days. And there's certain regions of the world that we just don't let you come from. So we kind of lock you in a hotel for 14 days, which I know sounds terrible. It's restricting your freedom, but it seems to be working for us. So no complaints here.
Does this hotel have beach access?
Well, actually, I was going to say my uncle, but he's not my uncle. My wife's uncle, actually. He came back from South Africa, so he got to experience this quarantine. He got put on a really nice island with, like, a beach view, and he was there for 14 days, and they were delivering him food every day. I'm like, how bad was it? He's like, no, it was bliss. I loved it. I think he enjoyed the 14 days of solitude.
That sounds like something I should try to get in on because I can afford the round trip airfare. 2 weeks like in a very, very nice like island resort being fan fed, I probably that can't swing.
That costs you more than the plane ticket.
But I got to say that
I know that was free. Welcome to socialism, people. That was completely and utterly free. I think now we're actually, to be fair, we're now doing the thing where we put you up in a hotel. So just a normal hotel. You don't get island accommodation anymore now that there are too many of you. But I believe it's still paid for, as far as I know. So it's not the people paying.
Excellent. I'm just gotta live in a country where the politicians that they're not gonna showboat like you people in Australia. They're not like, ooh, I want to be the most supportive of saving people's lives. No, screw you. I'm gonna be twice as more supportive of doing things that save people's lives than you. Give me a camera. Let me support mask initiatives and mass vaccinations. No, that's my camera to support. You know, we have the people who are in elected office who are like, you know what? It's not all about me. You know, it's not about me trying to make sure that we get federal money for healthcare, for prevention, for messaging. I could be out there, but you know, it's a very private time, and I don't want to pry into the personal lives of Americans by saying, "Hey, are you healthy right now?" Because that's none of my affair as a federal senator. So let's just say that there are positives and negatives to each of these two governmental approaches that we're seeing.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, we didn't invite Russell here to talk about, you know, the thing that has made us all cry for the last year.
Well,
and
actually, after several minutes, it's possibly now germane to say, are you okay? Is your family okay? How have you been
doing?
Yeah,
how are you? I noticed that you have facial hair a lot more than you did last time. I haven't seen you in a long time, so which is sad. Makes me sad.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, it's been interesting. It's an interesting time. I think there's obviously the COVID experience is a worldwide sort of shared experience. Our governments have all handled it differently. But yeah. I think a lot of things, you know, we have in common. Like, for example, we did the whole don't go to work for like a few months, stay home, work from home. We all went a bit crazy during that time. I shaved my head. I'm like, okay, I finally want to see what I look like with my head shaved. It turns out I look like I have a really small head. Which is weird because I have a really big head. It's just one of those unexplained physics phenomenons where you just shave off a tiny bit of hair and suddenly your head looks really small. And I also realized that I need to hit the gym. You know, I need to look swole, but I didn't.
Oh, we're
I didn't
all
do
there,
that.
Honey.
I just grew my hair back. I'm like, this is too hard. I'm just going to grow some facial hair and that'll make it all better.
It does make it all better. I kind of wish that I had the ability to do that because I got to tell you, it's a lot of maintenance. Around the
Andy's
chin area.
Is still looking very impressive, by the way. For those of you on the audio stream, the Andy mutton chops look amazing. Very
again,
healthy.
Well, those are easy, and I'm used to trimming those on my own. I've been putting off because on Thursday, 3 days from now, will be like, I'll be fully vaccinated because I got my second shot a few weeks ago. And so this is why, like, my, I have been giving myself like self haircuts every couple of months for the past year. And I keep putting off this one because I'm like, yeah, but in maybe next week or the week after, you can actually get it done by a professional who doesn't have to like be, okay, is that my left or my other right? Okay. But on the other hand, this is also like a thing, you know what, this is your last chance to like do the thing that your mom like would have been horrified as a kid. Like, oh my God, you cut your own hair. And so this is probably my last chance to like, maybe I should do, instead of just the buzzers, I could try to do the scissors cut as well, because ooh, I can't fancy. Do anything so bad that a professional can't fix it in a couple of weeks. But yeah, that was
the first thing I did when they like sort of kind of lifted some things, or not lifted, but they were like, it's okay if you go out and get a little, you know, self-care, whatever that they market it as now these days. It's the first thing I did is I went and I got my hair done because I just could not. I needed something. Before we get into a little more catch up, Russell, I need to ask you. We're recording this before Google I.O. is happening. It's likely folks will listen to it after Google I.O., which is fine. But I want to ask, like, are you excited to do a virtual event this year? Because I know that you weren't able to go for a couple of years because it was, like, so far. Obviously, that's, like, heck of a hop for you. So I'm curious, like, what you're feeling about this year's virtual event.
I feel very mixed. I actually feel like the Google developer community is probably one of my favorite communities that I'm involved in. I'm allowed to throw shade on this podcast, right? The iOS developer community is nice. There are a lot of nice people in it. But yeah, it's a members only episode, so we can tell the truth. I love the Google community. And I do miss seeing them all in person. So there's a bunch of people we used to catch up with, you know, every year in Mountain View. Some of them from Australia, some of them from New Zealand, a lot of them from the US, you know, the Philippines, a lot of sort of different countries. And there was something about just all being in the same place, you know, for the same thing. This sounds very cultist, doesn't it? We're all part of the same cult. We're driving towards the...
Well, I mean, cults have become very popular over the COVID times. And I definitely I've been studying them. Andy will tell you, because I keep telling him about the new things I learned. It's weird and gross. We're not going to get into it. However,
yeah, let's... I do miss that. But the to answer your question, I sound like some kind of politician now. I'm sorry, I don't recall. But no, to actually answer the question that you asked, I think it's interesting. Like, I don't know what to expect from this year's Google I.O. because I was actually booked in to come to last year's in person. I had to book early because I'm all the way in Australia. So that was pre-COVID time. So then COVID hit and I'm like, well, I guess we're canceling.
Did you get your points? Did you get like a refund or a certificate or anything?
I got most of the money back and then eventually all the money back when the airline was like, okay, fine, we'll give you the other 30% or whatever they're
it's okay, America's going to bail us out anyway. Yeah, we do. But anyway, see, it's very hard not to make this political. What do you think about all the different, like, so one thing that I did, which was made me feel really silly, is that I ended up signing up for events that were at like 4 a.m. my time, not realizing that this was an event for a very specific, like, part of the world. And so I didn't really realize until I would scroll down to the description and said, this is for folks who live in Southeast Asia. And I'm like, I am not in Southeast Asia. I just signed up. I just took a seat from somebody, like a virtual seat or whatever, and I felt bad.
This is our session on Android for embedded systems for farmers. And we're going to have this at 3:20 in the morning because I know you got to get the sour gum in. So we should have you all done by the time it's time before 4:30 in the morning.
Imagine? That's totally going to be the future, by the way. Farmers That's are going to go to it? Like...
Like, as someone that lives in a 30-minute time zone, I know some people think they don't exist.
Yeah,
but
they do here in Adelaide.
It's interesting to see you've got this worldwide event, but at the same time, you can't get away from the fact that there are time zones. Like, for those of you that remember Yasmin, she's doing I think they call them Ask Me Anythings, at 3:30 a.m. my time. And I'm like, I like you, Yasmin. You know, we're good friends, but I'm not getting up at 3:30 a.m. to ask you anything. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's hard. Alex Lindsay does office hours, like a streaming sort of like conversation between people who are into like streaming and graphics and everything. It's every single day. And it's almost become like its own city at this point. It started off really, really casually in March. And I keep wanting to do it and keeps asking me, but it's like, okay, but you do. And this sounds more pathetic, but it's like, so at 7 a.m., I'm going to have to be like sitting behind the thing and ready. and like, and there's video like, if it would be easier if it were 4 a.m. because the next day, okay, I'll just stay up like an extra 90 minutes and sleep another 2 hours like the next day at 7:30, 8 a.m. That's like, oh God, it's like a,
that's a groggy wake up time.
It's tough. It's like, it's right in that borderland. And I was running into that problem when I pre-ordered one of the new iPads, and the pre-order started at 8 a.m. My time. And it really was one of those, what are the chances that I'm going to like oversleep just long enough that I won't be able to get delivery until like June?
Andy, or that's 5 a.m. West Coast time. Do you know how hard it is for a Californian to get up at 5 a.m.? Give me a break. Sorry, I'm giving you crap.
If you're going to get the great waves, dude.
That's true. I'm guessing. That's
I have no idea where the great waves are, but
I don't either. Russell, do you know? You guys have surfing too down there.
I understand.
Audacious, dude. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I assume surfing comes from Hawaii or something. Someone can correct us on the historical accuracy of this. But yeah, we do a lot of it in Australia. In fact, I stayed on a surfing beach a few weeks back. And it's crazy. Just huge waves crashing that and these lovely, crazy people actually. With their surfboards. And I'm like, there's some insane people that love doing
real life white things. Noise machine. That's what you yes. do for yourself. You just went to go listen to giant ass waves.
Mostly white people screaming, I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die.
It can get a little scary out there. I've been reading some scary stuff about waves. Russell, I have another question for you. So you're a developer, right?
Ooh, allegedly.
For a long time, you were our developer person here at Material Podcast that we really like, you know, went to for these things that maybe Andy and I don't necessarily have a link to. So I'm curious to know, back to Google I.O., I was reading through the schedule. There's a very curious what's new in Android tablets or something along those lines. And it's about all the different ways of like scaling, you know, an Android app. I just want to ask you about that. Do you know anything about that? Have you thought about scaling your app for different screen sizes?
The tablets and still foldable exist on screen Android? Sizes?
How is that Pixel tablet working out for you? The one that you bought 3-4 years ago.
We have did you buy the so slate?
Oh, I bought everything from Google.
No.
Bless you.
The one with the clicky keyboard that magnets on so hard that you think it's going to take your fingers off. I bought the
that's going in the Hall of Fame. Books. You better hold on to that. That's going to be a
the one where you have to push really hard on the back to get the battery to plug back in because it keeps popping out. Like I've got all the Google tablets. it's interesting because it seemed like for the longest time Google was just pretending like tablets didn't exist. There were Chromebooks, obviously, and they made us sort of do all the screen scaling for the Chromebooks that you have to do. But every time we'd ask them about tablets, they'd be like, you know, next subject, please. And now you've got foldable phones, which I'm personally very excited about. I think the next few generations of those could be really interesting. They're a bit out of my price range at the moment. I don't know what it's like in the US, but here in Australia, it's $2,500 for a good foldable phone. And I'm like, yeah, I love the concept, but I don't love it that much to fork out that much money. But next few generations of those could be interesting. And Google's doing some really interesting stuff in terms of developer tools. So I don't know if you've been following I think it's called Jetpack Compose, is their new sort of reactive design.
That's included in a lot of different descriptions. Yeah. And it was in that tablet session as well. They said, we'll teach you how to use a different Jetpack. So you can just like drag and drop basically the strings of code that you need to make an Android app work for any size. And I've been reading the schedule trying to, you know, like pre-write in my head, figure out like what I'm going to be writing about. And this excites me because in my mind, this is officially what the Android tablet trajectory is, which is that it's not like an iPad killer. We're not going there. Apple's already set the market for the premium tablet from both like the low end, $300. Yes, low end to like the high end. So what Android does is it just does scalability. You have foldable phones, that's tablet. You have the entry-level tablets that like Walmart sells here in the US. They're like $60 tablets, Russell. They are
water-soluble,
the slowest things. Yes, and they're water-soluble, but they you can watch Melrose Place on them for hours. And there's now they have that new entertainment space that they're launching to like make it like Google TV. And then you have the Chromebook, because I imagine that this scalability is going to work for 12 to 15 inch devices.
Yeah.
That's sort of
to give people an idea who don't necessarily do Android development, the way it used to work, the old way, is you'd have all these XML layout files and you'd say, this layout is for this particular size range, this layout is for a different size range. So you might end up with three or four different XML files that say, this is how this particular view looks in all these different sizes. Mm-hmm. And the way it works with Jetpack Compose is it's way more like web development. It's not using HTML or web technologies, but it's a lot more about the idea of you don't define things for an exact size. You just say, this is how they scale. And I think web developers figured that out years ago. They've all been laughing at us in the mobile world because literally you think about your desktop and all the different you know, screen sizes you can stretch your browser to. And web developers are like, haha, we figured out all this.
We didn't do that in Android development. We are so, that was very short-sighted. No, but we're there
now. Like, we've had Jetpack Compose for a few years now, but I think this is the year it's finally going to be that something you can use in a production app. I know some people are already. Huh. There's always people on the bleeding edge, but I think this is the year that it'll go a bit more mainstream because it's finally got everything in it that it needs. And you don't need to sort of revert back to the old way of, you know, the evil XML layout files that we used to use. You can now just do it all in code. It's funny how that's turned around as well. Like, developers used to be militant about, you know, thou shalt not have any sort of visual interfacey stuff in code. And now they've gone the other way. They're like, no, visual interfacing stuff in code is fine. It makes it more readable.
Well, we got to thank the designers out there, for the web designers out there, for like making the web a beautiful place to be. I mean, God, you guys remember back in the days? Just like the text edit. Oh, websites. Woo! Yeah,
but still, like, why? We were talking about this last week when we were talking about maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel for Android tablets. Like, how come, like, even it's so hard to find a single tablet supported Android app that doesn't just look like we just took the phone app and we clicked a couple buttons to make it stretchable.
I stretched my shirt to fit over me. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. And I think that's going to continue to be a problem for a while because it's kind of like a twofold problem. One is the tools. Like, do the tools support it? And Android tools always have. Like, that's never been an issue. Like, if you've been willing to do the work, you've always been able to design a tablet interface. But the other side of it is outside of sample apps. You know, Google and Apple always show off these really amazing sample apps that are, here's a list, and next to the list is the detail pane, and you can rotate that and you can shrink it. Look, it works amazing. And then you go to build a real app and you're like, what if I don't have a list and a detail pane? What if I'm browsing through images? What if I'm doing other stuff? What if I've got, you know, a list of episodes in a podcast app or something like that? And it gets really hard as a developer to think about what is that meant to look like as it scales up. And then you look at the amount of people that own Android tablets and what they use them for. And if they're mainly watching, you know, Hulu and Netflix and whatever else on there, then do you really need to bother with scaling? Like, it's just one of those business model things that until enough people are complaining about how bad your app is on a tablet, then a lot of people don't do things for the tablet. And even Apple has this problem. You look at how successful the iPad is. The amount of apps that support sort of good iPad layouts are still very small. Like,
true.
In that sort of billion, you know, $7 billion market or whatever it is a quarter, like, the apps you load maybe 10 apps and 5 of them look good and 5 of them don't. It's just seems to be that the tablets are still like that at the moment.
Well, I feel like we should take a quick little break. And when we get back, more Russell.
Yes. We've got to get a year's worth of Russell into like 45 minutes here, so we're working here.
Yeah,
that's a lot of Russell.
Well, one of the most important apps on my phone normally, but even more when I'm stuck in the house with nothing to do but contemplate my own thoughts for the entire day, Pocket Casts has been getting a much, much bigger workout than usual. And I've been noticing it's been still going forward by leaps and bounds. Every time there's a new update, there's always something cool and neat that validates its spot, like on the first page, my homepage. So, Russell, how's development of the baby going? Excuse me, the non-meatware baby. I'm talking about the Electron-based baby.
Russell, before you answer, I need you to look at my podcast queue, like, it is
wow. Let's see. Show
it's
me
about
very long.
Nine. It's about nine podcasts deep of just like podcasts that I have downloaded and ready to go.
Yeah, COVID has brought about some interesting sort of podcasting trends, because if you think about it, some of us stopped commuting. So I, for example, stopped commuting for 3 months, and I found I was really struggling to get through my other podcasts, like, because I'd use the commute as my time to listen to podcasts, and I'd have, you know, 40 minutes either way, and I'd burn through my queue. I'd be struggling to find, you know, what to play next. And then all of a sudden I'm at home, I'm like, oh no, what do I listen to? Like, it's just, and now I have to pick my podcast and be like, yes, that one, no to this one, I love you, but, you know, you have to go, I don't have the time. But yeah, so a lot of people have switched to listening from home. We saw a big uptick in that on Pocket Casts. I think 30% increase in people using their desktop and web players, because I guess, you know, they're a lot of them were at home like we were.
It's very lonely. Yeah. It's very lonely. And I found podcasts to be, like, for me, I have completely, I no longer listen to the radio, which I'm sorry to local radio and broadcast, but I would just rather curate what I listen to and what I consume, which I realize is another issue entirely, but we're not on that. And so
you're not alone there.
Right. And I, you know, I've got my five Romanian podcasts that I do in a row. And then I got my like Real Housewives podcast. And then I like fall asleep to this Teen Mom podcast just because I like the girl, the way she sounds. Like, it's just, there's all, no, serious. Like, I just found all these reasons. When I'm cleaning, I listen to like this guy who does album reviews. You know, it's, I've found ways to integrate this into my life because I got really lonely.
Yeah, you know, anecdotally, we see a lot of people falling asleep to podcasts now, which I know was always a thing, but I feel like
thank it's God you got that snooze feature. Yes. Thank you for that snooze feature. I don't
know, I've always wanted to ask a podcaster, how does that feel? Like, is that a compliment? Someone saying they use your podcast to fall asleep, or is that just a slap in the
I
face?
I always do. No, here's that's, what that's, I do.
Yeah,
do automatic download, friends. Anybody who's listening to us right now, give us the download by doing automatic download. So even if you only play 5 minutes of our podcast, at least you gave us the download, and like that counts a lot toward our stats.
I have to say that I enjoy it when people say that, because that's not a, oh my God, you're so boring that I can't. It's a statement that I just want to relax. I want a soothing voice that can sort of like read to me while I go to sleep.
Yeah. And the Teen Mom chick, she talks a lot about, she is a recovering addict. And so she talks a lot about Teen Mom. I'm sorry, this is very intense, but this is what I fall asleep to. So this is podcasting.
I actually think it's a big compliment as well. Like, someone saying that they're comfortable enough with you, they like listening to you, that they can actually have that in their safe space of their bedroom, you know, where they're falling asleep. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty cool. Okay, I got one more question for you too. What about people that speed you up to, say, like 2 speed or 2.5 speed?
I don't want to hear how I sound. I feel like that's like seeing my face, you know, and they've been doing the reflection meme where you see what your face really looks like. You take a picture and it shows what people really see. Because we're all like we all have the mirror reflection when we take a photo. Yep. Yeah. So those of us with, you know, not symmetrical faces as myself, maybe feel a little self-conscious about that.
That's fine for me. So long as they're listening, that's still a compliment. My hat's off to you, because when I get excited, I go to like from 90 beats per minute to like 180. So if you can still keep up with that, I might be staving off like progressive degenerative cognitive diseases like Alzheimer's by saying I'm keeping proteins cannot possibly build up in your brain, because there's so much like electricity there just trying to follow my voice at 1.2x speed. But how about you? Like, you just mentioned how you take a look at the data that you're getting back from your users and the apps about how people are using them and what features are being used differently. Like, how quickly does that translate into like either a new feature, or hey, maybe we got to promote this feature from something that's 3 taps away to something that's right at the top?
Yeah, sometimes quite quickly. So the weird part is it actually depends on who's available to do what and how much work is involved. Like, the other day I got a feature request. I think someone wanted some extra data on the, so when you, this is getting really in the weeds, but when you listen to podcasts in your car and you don't have Android Auto, then you rely on the Bluetooth system to get all the episode metadata and stuff. And I literally just added this one thing for this person that put the episode number on the end. And they're like, oh, I want the episode number. I'm like, you know what? That's one line of code. That's actually really easy. There's no risk. I can do that in 5 seconds. I just do it now. And other times people ask for, they want some feature that looks really easy. And you're like, well, actually, I'd have to get the server team to do this. And then I have to do this. And then the other person would have to do this. And then we'd have to coordinate on this. And call me in 6 months, basically, like when that's finally done. So it's that weird thing of, I know this sounds obvious when you explain it, but how long is it going to take to do and who's involved? If it's just something I can push a few buttons on, I did that. In fact, the other day, someone actually recognized me. Like, I don't get that very often. Sometimes they'll answer the support request and they're like, you're Russell from Material. And I'm like, oh, that's a flashback.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, thank you for noticing.
Well, you see, the thing is, Pocket Cast is the unofficial official podcast player of the Material podcast. So I say unofficial official because, you know, it's not official. It's
if you are listening to this in Pocket Cast right now, I've got a fun feature for you to try. Dial the speed back to 0.5x and hear what we sound like drunk. It's good for like 30 seconds of laugh, I guarantee it.
Yes, that it would be amusing if one of us were drunk all the time and you could listen to it that
way. I've been drinking kombucha this entire time.
How could we imagine that whatsoever?
Which gives me a little bit, I don't know, it's not like a buzz, like a full-on buzz, but kombucha definitely makes you feel like, I'm drinking kombucha, man. Like, I'm getting that bacterious, whatever it's called, in my stomach, man. I'm sorry. But anyway.
Are you sure you're not from Australia, Flo? We love the kombucha down here. I have no idea what it is. It's just the floating stuff
you do.
In bottles, but it's everywhere.
I know everywhere. You do, and I really appreciate that. I'm looking forward to coming down, Ander, actually. I can't wait to bring my kiddo down there.
I'm about to buy a new hat directly from Australia. Because wow. my favorite hat, I can no longer find a source for it. When I say literally, I mean that in the way that the word is supposed to be used. I mean, I've bought literally the exact same hat, literally from the exact same source for like 15 to 20 years. And finally, they just can't find them anymore. So that horrible time is, and I've also like, I'm on my last good looking copy of the hat. Usually I buy them five at a time so that I have another 3 or 4 years to find a new source of it. And I finally realized that the only place I can find a replacement hat that looks the way I want it to look, like an Australian like ranching hat, is probably stores based in Australia. And so, but what that does mean though is that if I ever do go to Australia, like, and this would be probably like my daily wear, like I'm just going out to the store or I'm going to New York for the day, I would have to like buy a baseball hat or a derby or a bowler or something, because I can't be an American tourist in Australia wearing a
That's fair.
Good day, matey. Where's the Barbie that we can put the shrimp on to?
Yes. Although I would love to see that. I think Americans get pretty well treated in Australia, I have to think. We do love you guys. We love your accent. So wear yes. whatever hat you want, Andy. We're on board. And if you leave the Made in Australia sticker on it, extra points for you.
I would actually not just Made in Australia, but I'll put the tag that says that actually I bought this from an Australian store. So I sent money across the pond to your wonderful
Look,
country.
I'm not a tourist. Yeah. Leave me alone. It says on the back.
Well, again, I did just recently complete all like 22 episodes of the Amazing Race Australia, which only stayed inside Australia. So I feel as though I kind of know the soul of the country at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's a very poisonous, venomous soul.
Yes.
What's it? Maybe you can shine a light on this. What is this crap about how, like, there'll be six or seven episodes into The Amazing Race, and suddenly this new team jumps in, having done nothing to earn their way into like skipping over the first six or seven. That just seems like it's just baloney, is what it is. I don't get it. I don't approve of it either. I was an ass, but I should have been.
Hey, speaking of baloney, I've got a question for you, Russell.
Ooh, is it about baloney?
Fine, I don't know what baloney is. We'll just let him dodge the question. Time That's to fine. We're going to let him completely kind of meat, off the hook. Right? We're supposed to be journalists who are like doggedly speaking
I'm
truth
sorry,
to power.
I'm sorry, Andy.
But that's
that
fine.
Was my
no,
fault.
No, 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 no.
He's a friend, about Wear OS.
And I guess that we should be accused of taking a friend and treating him easy.
See what happened after you left, Russell? This is what happened.
You guys are hard-hitting journalists now. I'd love to see it.
Yes, and we fight all the time on air. It's great.
It kind of changed when we heard that there's like a $50,000 honorarium for the Pulitzer. And that changed our attitude real quick.
I would hate to be in competition with you, Andy, but I would be very honored. Russell, what do you think about Wear OS? Because for some reason, it's on the Google I.O. schedule again. There's a little thinking in there. You know, I want to, like, I'm avoiding asking you about any of like the big obvious things because we know where Pixel's going. We know where Google Assistant is going. I want to know what you think about these, you know, underdogs, to which Wear OS, I don't know if it's so much an underdog as it is just becoming like a spirit of itself.
I was going to ask, should we remind Russell and the audience what Wear OS is? I don't think we should assume that they know that Google has a wearable operating system for smart watches, similar to, but not like the Apple Watch, that they have called Wear OS. So that if you go into a drugstore, a vending machine at a bus station, and they have smartwatches there, it's likely that the watches they sell there will be running the Wear OS, not the Apple. The
so what,
Apple
yikes.
What you're saying, Andy, is if I buy a Samsung watch, it'll have Wear OS on it? Is that right?
No,
it
has Tizen OS on
it. Oh, interesting. Interesting. So it's not on the most popular. That's really confusing.
We could Wear OS because we despise it and everything it stands for, and we think it's an utter abject failure and that the
yikes, Andy. I don't know that I think it's an utter abject failure, but I'm definitely...
I will say that I've met the Wear OS team, extremely friendly, amazing people who really love feature suggestions. And I've also met the hardware team that work on really Wear OS. In fact, one of the guys was wearing two Wear OS watches, one on each wrist. That's the level of dedication. But I do not understand Google's strategy. I don't know if you can even call it a strategy. If people think their messaging strategy is messed up, their watch strategy just makes no sense to me. Because I was at the Google I/O where they gave out two free watches. So I got the square Samsung-y one and the round Motorola one.
It was the square LG one.
And they beat Apple to the punch. Yeah. There was no Apple Watch. Like they were literally first to market with a really good card-based operating system. I'm like, this is the future of watches. Yeah. This is genius. Like this is finally something Google is good at. You know, all the AI picking out the cards that you want to see and everything else. This is going to go places. And then it went places.
It went places. It went nowhere. Down.
Yeah.
Through the bedrock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it went nowhere.
And there's a ton of different reasons. There's hardware and there's chips and there's software. Yeah. And I know. But if you're talking about the future of Wear OS, I think something is happening this year. There's been a lot of buzz coming out of Google about, potential new features.
They acquired Fitbit. Things. It went through in the EU. Fitbit. Like everybody's doing blood glucose monitoring. It's, I'm just saying.
My only hope for this is that it's not another Allo situation. I don't know. For those of you that remember the messaging app that Google released to great fanfare, only to kill off, 1 or 2 years later. I hope that whatever they're doing is something positive that's going to have a long-term impact and not just a flashy thing that turns up for a few months and then disappears. Because I really think Google could succeed in this space. They've got the health aspects. Yeah. They've got the hardware. They've got the software. They just need to glue these things together into something coherent that they bash manufacturers, over the head with and get them to make. And just hasn't really happened recently.
Yeah, because those of us who are invested in the Google ecosystem, it's because we have made that considered trade. Like we figure that, yes, it is an advertising company. They do collect lots of information about me and my habits. However, in my opinion, I won't speak for any other user, but it is taking advantage of me, quote unquote, but it uses that data in ways that can really, really create great services that I really take advantage of. And if they were to put that same kind of mojo into wearables, I would really like that. I did buy a Fitbit, like a cheaper Fitbit, like just the fitness, their nice fitness band sort of thing a few months ago. And I did, actually, I'm wearing it more than I was wearing my Apple Watch, only because being able to use it for several days without having to recharge it was a big deal. It has all the basic features that I want. And if Google were to leverage part of that by saying it will still collect all the data as the simple $130 band that you can wear all the time and that is very, very convenient to use, but the data that's being collected will be crunched and sent back to you in a really useful way. You're right. That could be a really big leap for Google. It's just, and obviously I don't mean that. I was very careful to say that Wear OS as an abstract anthropomorphic character should be ashamed of itself. The people who work on it shouldn't, because there's a lot there's a lot they're dealing with. They're doing their best. And obviously I was
it's not their fault that Qualcomm did what it did with the Wear processor, and like Russell mentioned, the cards, UI, like all of that was really ahead of its time.
As a matter of fact, Apple Watch was a disappointment to me when it first came out because it was very, very unfocused. They hadn't figured out the reason why they wanted to make it, which is unusual for Apple. And the first iteration of Wear OS, particularly on that nice round screen, it had a focus and a purpose and was so suitable for being something that you just glance at to get the information you probably were looking for when you decided to lift up your wrist and then go back to your life. Whereas Apple at the same time was saying, and look, I just got a text message from my daughter who needs to get into the garage. So I'll just launch my garage door opener app and I can see a live stream of the garage door opening. I said, that's really not what I want to wear. I got a phone to do that. I mean, why would I want to look? I don't care. Thank you. You should be very proud of that. I'm not saying you should, but I'm saying that this is probably not. I'm wondering if you really thought this through after you got the idea of what if we made one out of solid gold and charged $13,000 for it. I'm thinking that that's what got you excited. Then you didn't start thinking about what if we should do something more than tell you the time and receive text messages.
Yeah, I think that's one of the cool times that I agree with you, Andy, that Google got something right and Apple got it absolutely wrong. And then Google backed down and tried to copy Apple, which I really don't understand. Like, I think they had the better concept, they had the better implementation. They should have just kept running with it. And maybe they have data I don't have access to that says people want X, Y, and Z. I don't really know. But I kind of feel like they nailed it and then they just didn't. Like afterwards. And I'm talking about that, not the software team, just everybody who works above them, who controls the direction of it and everything else. And if you're listening, maybe you've got some secret strategy that I'm not aware of, and hats off to you. Like, I look forward to seeing it. But until that comes out, I think it's fair to say that Wear OS has been a disappointment the last few years.
Yes.
Sigh.
maybe we're hoping that maybe it should just take a year off from college. You know, just find some sort, just do a job for a year, think about what it wants to do.
Spend come a back season to, on the real world.
Yeah, travel, see the world.
We should qualify that. One of the early seasons where you were actually expected to take advantage of the fact that you're living rent-free in a city apartment. Not the one where, okay, here's your open bar, here's your sex jacuzzi.
It's okay that Seattle all became DJs. It's fine.
Well, in addition to the global pandemic, there was another big change in the past few years since the last time you were hosting the show, Russell. Florence has had a kid, and you two are like 10 to 14, 15 years ahead on this. And how have you been navigating? Do you have any advice for Flo, especially being a nerd parent who is trying to raise a kid that... shall we say, flies his or her freak flag proudly, but nonetheless can keep on to his or her lunch money throughout the course of the day until lunch.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. So I will tell you that nerds are kind of cool, kind of not. Like, that seems right. It's a roller coaster, right? One day they're cool, one day they're not. That's just the way of things. This is very, very interesting. So I feel like sometimes raising kids is a bit of a psychological experiment with no FDA approval required. You can run your own things and see where they go. So one of my experiments is I didn't want to push like tech onto my kids when they were really young, just in case they push back. Because I remember when I was young, my older brother would take me fishing and he just loved fishing. And he took me fishing so much that I came to hate fishing. I absolutely hate it. I hate it. And I think it's because he wake me up at 5 a.m. and he dragged me out. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, that was nice of him, but I hated it. And I still hate it to this day. And I tried to do that with my kids and it's been semi-successful. So I've been trying to introduce tech only when they ask about it. So a few years back, they were like, I really want to make a game. So we downloaded a half-finished game and they made the little sprites and the animations and all those sort of things. And I mean, it was a janky game. I'm not going to pretend like it was some amazing work of art.
You got to start somewhere. My first website was janky, so it's fine.
But it was really fun. And we had sort of fun for like, a week or two. And then they got bored of that and they moved on to other stuff. So I'm like, okay, we'll let this go. And then they got into, I think it's a game called Roblox, where you can design your own levels and other crazy things. So every now and again, I wander into their room and I'll see them in some crazy 3D level editor and be like, oh, tell me how that works. Like, do you need any help? And they never need my help. It's weird. I'm like, but I work in this industry, man. But I still try and back off. I'm like, okay, fine. If you've got your own life, like, I guess you're living it. But if you need help, I'm here. I've done this stuff before.
You're making me sad because I'm already.
For any parents out there of young kids, it is so freaking hard. They have these inbuilt senses for, I like to think that if you're calm and you're at peace and you're just enjoying the moment, kids have a sensor for that. It's just built in. It's like AI programming. They're like, boop, 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 must go interrupt, mum or dad or parent or whatever. It's just what they do. And then the weird part is when they grow up, so my kids are older now, they're both teens, you actually start to miss that because they don't interrupt you anymore. They're off in their rooms doing their own things. They're living their own lives. They've got their own Discords and all these other things that I'm sort of learning about. And then you miss it. You're like, oh, I miss the times when they were little and they'd come and interrupt you. Even though it was at the time, it was so annoying. Like you just... You're like, go away, kid, just 5 minutes, please, just 5 minutes. But you'll miss it for you will.
I already get sad when she like doesn't want me for comfort. She wants her dad. It's just I'm like dealing with my own projections. This is very hard. This is why life is weird. It's crazy. It's wild.
I've also come to realize that no matter what you do, your kids will feel messed up by you in some way, shape, or form. So even if you feel like you've set up the life that you never had for them and everything else, they'll still find something. They'll be like, oh, dad did this thing and, oh, it messed me up so badly. So I figure if you're going to mess them up anyway, you might as well just lean into it. Like,
fair. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Fair.
So that that justifies you're always speaking in a deep Italian accent every time you're around them so that they would speak weird.
Oh, absolutely. And then like one day I'm just going to snap out.
Why are you doing this to me? I cannot compile the map right now.
Exactly.
I have a friend who had twins. And she was she's a scientist, and the family had to sort of like nudge her and say, "Will you stop referring to you stop referring to them as the experiment and the control? Okay, they're your children. They have names. I know you think that's funny.
I think that's hilarious. I think that's
if you can't have some fun along the way, then why did you bring them into the world?
And that is such a scientist parent thing to do too. It's the perfect kind of trolling to do to your children the minute they're out. I love that. Russell, I have one last sort of Google-related question for you before we kind of start have to closing out and unfortunately saying bye-bye. It's on the bonus.
Au revoir. Not goodbye. Au revoir.
Exactly. Or in Italian, arrivederci. Sorry to
anybody. Return to me. That was a closing credits from the Pink Panther song.
I know. We're still singing.
Come to me, and the world will be ours to see. Okay, fine. Question. Sorry.
Russell, my daughter.
I am a lot to deal with. I appreciate that.
You're fine. Russell, I made my daughter a Google account. Like, I immediately signed her up for Gmail. I got her all that stuff because I wanted us to have control of it before, I don't know, some bot out there, some other person with her name, let's say, you know, takes over it. Did you do any of that stuff for your kids? Like, is this stuff, I mean, you just mentioned your kids have a Discord, which is like, to me, wild, even though I had AOL and Messenger back in the day.
Yeah, we had ICQ and all the stuff back in the day. It is, yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because as a parent, you want to protect them, but at the same time, you want them to have a digital presence and be up on all that stuff. So I did. In fact, I went to the level of creating them both Google accounts when they were born. I forgot the passwords to both because I didn't have a password manager back then. And so literally both their emails now have a one in them, and I'm the person that owns the one without the one on the end, and I have no idea how to log into it or how I registered it.
Well, at least you got that, to that it is a power before move.
My salutations. That is a maneuver worthy of a Romulan.
So they both have a Google account that's like, you know, some combination of their names with a one on the end, and that's all my doing, and they still.
That's how they're going to apply to jobs going forward. I mean, you just really set them up for success right there. Like, not only is this my name, but I'm the only one.
Yeah. But just email me at therealstardustivanovich@gmail.com. my dad had power issues. He had to get the.
Oh, I will tell you about the power issues, Andy. So that the most power trippy thing I've done is. Microsoft has an amazing feature called Screen Time. So it's built into the Xbox. It's built into Windows computers, which they both use. Oh, and you can go to town on that thing. You can be like, they're allowed to play between this time and this time, and then they're not allowed to play this time, and you get a total budget allocation of time. And then you literally, if they're not turning up to lunch, you just set the screen time over lunchtime, and they just appear out of their bedrooms. They just pop out, and I'm like, yeah, success. And if you want them to help you cook dinner, you do the same thing. 5 o'clock, you just kick them off the devices, and it's all automated. It's not your fault. It's the Microsoft. The evil Microsoft is doing this to you. Not me. It's Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, screen time. Amazing.
Okay. So what do we learn today on the Material Podcast, folks? We learned that Microsoft is the evil one keeping your children from playing their games when they should be doing their things that they should be doing. That's genius. I definitely can't wait to institute those. Unfortunately, I don't have much control over a one-year-old. Yes, as we learned earlier today, because we started this podcast late because my child was throwing herself on the floor. Yeah,
they do that sometimes.
Did she hit it? She has good aim for 1 year.
Yeah, she just, you know, ridiculous.
You anyway, worry when she throws her out the floor, herself on the floor and misses. That's when
she does the dramatic like. Like she'll put her hand over her face and then just like go down like
Mankind is born to suffer just as surely.
That's
as
how you know she's my child, by the way. That's how you know she comes from me.
I gotta say that's one of the absolute greatest things about being an uncle. So some of my other family have kids, and borrowing their kids for a few hours and then giving them back when they start to get weird is just one of life's great joys. It's like, here, have this back. This is your problem now.
I didn't give my nieces and nephews back until they got weird. It was my duty. I'm not even joking here. I felt as though my duty as uncle was to say that, you know what, you're away from your parents for 2 or 3 hours. I'm an adult. I will prevent you from getting yourself hurt or any bad situations. Your goal for the next 2 or 3 hours is to get as weird as you need to be. If you decide, Uncle Andy, I want to build a Hulk costume with a ballerina bottom to it, guess what? We're going to the fabric store. We're going to build you a Hulk costume with a ballerina bottom to it.
Love it. I love it. Russell, I hate to say bye now.
Russell, you always make great stuff. Like, what's the next really great thing that you're working on? Even if it's just like a flan for a family cookout. If it's software, great, that we can enjoy. But what's on your mind and what are you building? What are you doing right now?
Well, I literally just built a bike rack. So you can mount bikes vertically on the wall. That's very exciting. I guess if listeners are looking for Pocket Cast features, then we're watching Google I/O and Apple WWDC very closely. And I love it because Google I/O is first. So you get to see all the exciting stuff they announce. And normally with Google I/O, there's things you can do straight away. That's what I love about it. They push all the libraries out. You can download them. You can put those straight away. So hopefully some really exciting things in there. And there's also some upcoming vehicle launches, which are in. I can't say which ones because some of them are under NDA, but we're in a few cars, which is super exciting for me to see. These are cars that you don't even plug your phone into. So Pocket Cast are just there, ready to go with this little icon. And I don't know what it is about being in a physical thing. Maybe it's being a software developer all your life and just seeing everything virtual. When you're actually in a physical piece of hardware and it ships with it, you're like, oh, that's so cool. I've made it. It's like when you see your name in a newspaper or something like that. I don't know why, but it's in print, right?
Names. Yeah.
I'll never forget the time. So Phil and I were on the front page of our local newspaper, not a very big one, but it's our local one. And I showed it to my kids. And the first thing I had to explain was what a newspaper was. And that just took the magic just completely out of it. I'm like, look, I'm on the front page. And they're like, what the heck? Did you print that? What is that? I don't understand. And I'm like, oh, forget about it.
No, that's well deserved for the entire team. I've always thought that Pocket Casts is like the cast iron skillet in the kitchen, where there's so many podcatchers out there, and a lot of them are, oh well, this is the Instant Pot, it's electronically controlled pressure cooker that blah blah blah, and this is the incredible sous vide machine that you have a vacuum sealer, and oh well, we have this special toaster that has a special tray so you can put water in it, and they're good, they have their features, they have their points of view, but whereas there's the one thing that is so perfectly suited for the job it is intended to do, which is to do everything that's associated with catching podcasts, it's the cast iron skillet that your grandmother had it for 30 years, your mom then had it for another 40 years, and now you have it, and it's going to be there for another 30 years because it was just one of those beautifully made, perfectly suited objects that doesn't get distracted by, well, the thing is, a lot of people don't know. A lot of people we find, they want to listen to a podcast, but they also want to be able to hear a recipe, instructions being given to them in one ear of the channel. Like, okay, but how about just help me find podcasts I want, help me to get the episodes as they come out, and then help me to appreciate and enjoy them. Like, oh, you want podcasts. You don't want our thing.
Oh, thanks, Andy. I will say that we've been building podcasts now for 10 years, and it never ceases to amaze me how many different people use it and what different enjoyment they get out of it. And they send in their stats. So there's a stats page in Pocket Cast, for those of you that don't know, that tells you how many hours you've listened to. When you get to days, it gets into days. There's some people out there that have got, I think, 400 days worth of listening time inside of Pocket Cast. So that's continuous listening time. That's regardless of whether you sped it up or not. That's just how much physical time you spent listening. And that blows me away. Just really does blow me away.
I want to see like a close your rings sort of like feature or widget, so that just I've got my heart rate going, I've got the steps counting, but I've also managed to listen to what the number of episodes of material that I wanted to get caught up with. Yeah, so we should. This has been a really special episode.
That's my sad side.
It's like, yeah, we do. We do special episodes on a bunch of different topics, and we always choose topics because we think that we're going to have fun doing them, and that people will have fun listening to them. But this is obviously extra special because we're talking to a friend that we haven't spoken to in quite a bit, and it's always great to see how well you're doing, how much you seem to enjoy the work that you do, and just to see that smiling bearded face. It's just lovely.
Just lovely.
Oh, no, it's been amazing seeing you two again. I'll never forget the time that Andy made us watch The Intern, that movie about Google, you know, for one of our special episodes. It's a highlight. And
I wasn't here for that one.
Oh, no, but maybe you want to come back for a future one, because there's another movie that has the word material in it that I've earmarked for another special episode. So that's going to be like our special viewing mm-hmm. show. So as I said, you know, remember what I said before about encouraging my nieces and nephews to be weird? Well, that wasn't learned behavior. That was.
Yeah. Because see, Russell, we're doing bonus episodes here at Relay FM. So anybody who becomes a member at Relay.fm/membership, which Relay.fm/membership. mm-hmm. Then you know that we're doing a book club. We have a new book club called Material Studies, Russell. So it's where we book or listen to a podcast. Yeah. It's, you know,
there's a whole section in Barnes & Noble now about books about why Google and Facebook are absolutely the dickens in terms of being nasty to people in the country. So there really is a lot to dig into
right. We have those little stools in our aisle so you can sit and read, because it's, you know,
can I tell the premium member listener who hopefully hasn't pirated this feed and is paying for it monthly or yearly, just one last thing. I've tried to keep a very straight face, but someone has named this conversation Randy Flow.
That was me.
And I've looked up at it every few minutes and I'm like, sense of humor. I love it.
Is that bad? Oh, is Randy a word?
Do you not have that in Australia? I mean, America, sorry. Yeah, in Australia, that actually means something.
Were you possibly too young for Austin Powers?
I only watched the first one.
There you go. Do I make you Randy? There you go.
Yeah, okay. Oh, wait. Let me see. Hold on. Randy.
we've all learned
something in this episode. I'm glad that this was a beneficial thing.
A lot of my English as a second language has been coming out lately, where I've been using words that I should not be using. So I just want to apologize.
That's okay. I had a friend visiting here in New England from Australia, and he absolutely demanded that we pull over so we could take a picture of the outside of a women's discount clothing store. I couldn't figure out why he was so hysterically keeled over laughing at a sign that says Frugal Fannies, and and then he explained it to me like, oh, okay, I could see how that is. And he ruined that. And it's a store where my mom shopped a lot. So that totally ruined that for the rest of my life.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You just wait until the first time an American tells you they're rooting for you. And I'm like, please don't. Just stop talking right now. Let's never have this conversation again.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, that feels like a good place for us to
cleansing
end.
Port. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I guess, Andy, we're just going to say goodbye.
So we really do want to thank all of you for supporting the show by being a member. It really does help us out. And we do feel like a little, as I think you have sensed over the past hour, we feel like we can be a little more free over the past hour, because you're all friends here. You get us. And so that if we do want to say words like Randy and Fanny, we can even say bottoms, and you're not going to get all bent out of shape over it. That's the sort of relationship, the buddy-buddy relationship that we now have. So that's going to wrap it up from here. Russell, thanks again so much for coming on the show. I can't tell you how happy that we were to get this chance to talk to you again.
No, thanks for having me. This was a pleasure.
And don't forget to check us out on the main feed.